You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. For hundreds of ideas, free experiments and more, go to physicseducation.com.au. And now, here's your host, Ben Newsom.
So you really want to get your kids to connect with museums, zoos and aquariums and all those sorts of great places to teach your kids how the real world works. The problem is that you might be too far from it. It costs too much to jump on a bus. Well, our next guest, Jan Zanetta, certainly knows a way around this. She has over 180 content providers, not just in North America, but across the world, who are more than able to use video or web conferencing technology to have, well, connections straight into your classroom with live experts who are ready to answer your kids' questions.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast.
Yes, welcome again to another Physics Ed podcast. My name is Ben Newsom, and I'm so glad to bring a great friend of mine, Jan Zanetta, to you, because not only does she know a lot about distance education, but she really does know a whole bunch of people right across the planet, not just in North America, but seriously around the globe, that your students can be connecting with to learn all sorts of stuff. And frankly, it's not just in science. We're talking art, history, maths, music, the lot. She knows so many people in galleries and museums all over the place that can really enrich her students' lives. She is the Managing Director for the Center for Interactive Learning Collaboration, and she's a board member of the International Society for Technology and Education. So in other words, Jan really knows the red tech. So let's listen on in. She's got a lot to share.
You're listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. We love making science make sense. Why don't you book us for a science show or workshop in your school? If you're outside of Australia, you can connect with us via a virtual excursion. See our website for more.
Jan Zanetis, welcome to the Physics Ed Podcast.
Thanks, Ben. Glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much. And I know that you've got a lot of stuff going on, very, very busy throughout the day. And this is the last meeting before you get to run away.
That's right. I've got a 2-week vacation coming up.
Gotta love that, especially leading up to a major conference coming around the corner. Actually, before we get into this, we probably should let people know. Jan, what do you do?
Well, currently, I am the Managing Director of the Center for Interactive Learning and Collaboration, which is basically a clearinghouse where teachers can find great content from museums, science centers, art galleries, authors, etc., all over the world. And that content is live interactive video programs.
That's interesting. Now, content, there might be some people who know exactly what you're talking about when connecting with authors and museums and zoos and things. But some people may not know what that sort of content might be. I mean, let us know a bit further what that means.
Well, I'll just give you a couple of examples. So one of my favorite content providers is an organization based in Sydney called Physics. And these guys do live science experiments with students across Australia, but they also connect with other educators and students around the world through my organization, the CILC. So that's one example. But we have about 200 content providers, mainly in the U.S., but also in Canada, Australia, the Middle East, and Africa, that do these programs with students. And the programs are geared toward what the teacher is teaching. So in the U.S., it's based on content standards that are set for the whole country. We have programs for all ages, from kindergarten all the way up to senior citizens. So lifelong learning going on in these lessons. Some of my favorite content providers are places like the Royal Tyrrell Museum in Canada, Moat Marine Lab in Florida. They're just all over the place. We have an organization in Ghana, Africa, that connects students in Africa to students anywhere else in the world. So not only do we do these live programs, but we also host lots of collaborative projects where kids can talk to kids in different parts of the world for cultural exchanges, language practice, etc.
That's so cool. I can imagine what it'd be like as a kid in New York getting to speak with a kid in Nairobi and then another kid. That's just outstanding.
Not only do they get to speak to them, they get to see them. So they can share resources, they can present to each other, they can have debates. There's all kinds of ways that you can use today's technology to connect kids to kids and kids to museum, etc.
Yeah, so much fun. Actually, just reminding me, I was lucky enough to go to the New York Hall of Science a couple of years ago and met up with the team out that way, and they were describing this connection they were doing with students where they were doing a program just to a local school in their neighborhood in New York. And in the next room, another one of their educators was speaking with a group in Kenya, and they realized that both were almost talking roughly about the same stuff ishly. Like one group was talking about light and color, and they were speaking in to this group in Kenya around, I think it was microbes and digital microscopy and that type of thing. And they realized that there was some theming about light, and they suddenly twigged that maybe they should get these students to meet each other. So they walked one computer into the next room, and it kind of went from there and started. Suddenly these students in Kenya who were now talking to students in New York, and it was completely ad hoc, and gee, it worked.
Yeah, that's the brilliant part about this, is that when groups of students connect, at first they're aware of differences, but the more they chat, the more they realize that they have similarity.
The thing about CILC, it's got a couple of hundred content providers, but my gosh, there's a lot of school groups involved. I mean, just wondering if you give people an idea just how many people are actually connecting through your organization.
So we've been around for 23 years, starting in the state of Indiana. And we have grown and grown and grown. So now we're international, and we have about 50,000 members across the planet in 93 different countries. And that's over the years. Those aren't all active now. I'd say we probably got 20,000 or so that are still coming onto the website and booking programs and using our resources.
So that's a lot of people and a lot of content providers. And obviously this being a science education podcast, I'd like to sort of give people a bit of a heads up about the types of things. And he quickly alluded to it. Yes, physics is one of them. I mean, yeah, full disclosure, Jen and I do very much know each other, but there really are several hundred museums, zoos and aquariums that are just wicked, and good two-thirds of them are doing science content. I mean, you mentioned the Royal Tyrrell. I mean, let's talk about that. That's a good start. I mean, I know they're one of your favorite content providers. What do you like about them?
Well, I like that they've got dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's
so cool. schools are always interested in dinosaurs. I know you found some in Australia now, which is very cool.
Yeah, up in Winton.
These guys are located up in the western side of Canada, and they've just got some great artifacts, and they use those in their presentations with the kids. But it's not just about dinosaurs. We've got programs about manatees and dolphins, endangered species, waterfowl, lots of animal kinds of programs, as well as hard science like what you do, physics and biology, all spectrum of science.
Actually, one of the ones that reminds me, and I'm sorry, I can't remember who they are. I think it's St. Louis or something, but the group that shows autopsies or something to that effect, what was that about?
That is AIMS, A-I-M-S. Out of St. Louis, and we also have another provider, I can't remember, but they both do live autopsies, they do live operations like knee replacement surgeries, cadaver dissections. That's where we get most of our high school secondary students.
Yeah, I bet.
Because their schedules are really hard to match, but they'll change their schedule so they can get into one of these live autopsies. Programs.
That is insane. Like, I mean, that's the beauty about being able to connect by video conference to anywhere on the globe, is it can take you places that in some ways you had no business being. That's interesting.
Right. So when else could you watch a live surgery and ask the surgeon questions as he's doing his job?
That is insane. I must actually, I'm going to be connecting up for this podcast with Derek from the Museum of Human Disease. And wouldn't that be a cool collaboration between those two?
Oh, yeah.
There's just so much cool stuff with it. Actually, let's just go back a little bit. I mean, you haven't just done stuff with CILC. I mean, you have done a lot of interesting things over the years. Where did this all start? Where did this all come from?
Well, believe it or not, I was a science teacher. I taught year seven students. At the end of my teaching career, I started out in special education and got a master's in reading, but I truly loved science, even though I wasn't trained that much in science. But I loved doing hands-on things with my students, and they really took to that method. But along the way, I was also very keen on the technology side of things. I mean, I was around when the first Apple computers became available to schools. And I would train teams of students to support other teachers using the technology because the teachers were afraid of it.
Yeah, wow.
So from there, one of the technologies I discovered in the late 1990s was video conferencing. And I got trained on how to use that at Vanderbilt University in Nashville and was offered a position at their virtual school. Well, I wasn't ready to leave the classroom, and they kicked me out, basically. They said, you're crazy if you don't take this opportunity. So
yeah.
I went to Vanderbilt, and I was tasked with connecting schools in Tennessee with scientists at Vanderbilt University, which was very cool. But then we expanded outside of the state of Tennessee, and I got connected up with CILC in about 2003 and became their first out-of-state content provider in their network. Okay. So I was their guinea pig for non-Indiana content provider. And from there, we grew to international. So when I left Vanderbilt in 2005, I was doing programs with France and Australia and all over the world. So
what sort of programs were you doing just out of interest? Like, I mean, obviously you're connecting with scientists, but what were you doing out of state? Like, just interested.
Well, I expanded beyond science. Actually, we did series on the Holocaust and had Holocaust survivors talking all over the place. We did a series on special people with special needs and dealing with handicaps. We had career series where I'd bring in the engineer chair of the department or somebody from the law school to talk to kids about different careers in those areas. So the virtual school at Vanderbilt was where I really got into developing these programs. And I wrote a book along those years with a couple other teachers, which ISTE published, International Society for Technology and Education. And that book was well received. And because of the attention I got from the book, I was discovered by a corporate company called Tandberg. And they were the company that was the leading company in video conferencing equipment, and they hired me as their global market manager. So I got to travel the world and talk with educators all over the place and spread the joy about how you could use this technology to connect students with the outside world. After that, Tandberg was bought by Cisco, and I got the opportunity to go to Australia and work as an education specialist for Cisco in Australia for 2 years. Then I came back to CILC as their executive director.
Full circle.
Yep.
It's always amazing listening to where people go. I mean, I was doing a presentation to some university students, they're pre-service teachers, and they were just asking, what can you do once I enter a school? Is that it? And I said, not a chance is that it. There's so many different ways. I mean, you were teaching, then you started helping out the university, then the university had you become a content provider, then you start working with Tandberg. It just keeps on going. It's amazing where you can end up.
Yeah. And I never really meant to do any of those things. They just sort of happened at the right time.
Yeah, they're good accidents.
Yeah.
They're totally fine. Actually, just thinking about it, even just from a time frame, late 90s, you would have been doing that on dial-up.
Oh, absolutely. We had ISDN lines, which were telephone lines, bundled together. So you had to use 8 telephone lines to do one call at, 768K, very slow.
And with some serious coin behind it, that would have cost a bit.
Oh, yeah. A typical video conferencing setup in those days was about $15,000, not counting the phone bills.
Well, the phone bills will be off the hook.
Yep.
Well, not off the hook because you've got 8 lines running.
Yeah, eight lines going to long distance places.
Yeah, right. It's just amazing how technology is accelerating. I mean, we're connecting right now on Zoom. It was simply just a click of a button and done. It's done over IP and it all works perfectly fine.
So I think the video conferencing has gone through three stages in my lifetime. The first was the ISD inlines. The second was in about 2005, they converted a lot of stuff over to IP. So instead of plugging in phone lines, you plugged in your internet cable. Mm-hmm. And life was good because that was all one low price. And then more recently, in the last 3 or 4 years, I've seen the rise of web-based conferencing like we're using now on Zoom.
Yeah, it's insane. Now, you did briefly mention, and I have already sort of alluded to what's happening in just a few weeks' time, there is a major conference of which you're heavily involved in. Let's go down that path. Let's let people know about this because there would be people who may not know.
Okay, great. International Society for Technology and Education, known as ISTE, puts on a conference once a year at the end of June in various really cool cities across the U.S. So this year it will be in San Antonio, next year in Chicago. This conference brings in anywhere between 15,000 to 20,000 participants. That's not counting the vendors. This is a humongous show, and the focus is all around how to use ed tech in education. So we'll be looking forward to seeing Ben at this conference.
Absolutely. In the middle of winter, I get to go over to summer in San Antonio just for a week. Yeah.
Well, really hot summer too. So I'm on the board of directors of ISTE, which is a great place to be because I get to see all the latest and greatest trends in technology and rub elbows with some of the brightest stars in the world.
Well, this is what's really cool about it. It's not just about video conferencing. There are so many PLNs. I mean, actually, I'm going to throw an acronym, so I shouldn't because some people have got no idea what a PLN is. Professional Learning Network. There are so many places that are doing cool stuff. I mean, let's just think about different things that people can actually do and learn at ISTE. I mean, what?
And it's not just at the conference. The purpose of the PLNs is to keep the learning going throughout the rest of the year. So, Ben, you and I are on the IVC PLN, but I bet you you're on some of the others. Like, I'm very involved with the Global Education PLN and Online Learning PLN.
Those guys are great. I mean, especially the Global Education one, I mean, that's unreal because that's really educators connecting with educators and students connecting with students in any format possible. Which is very cool. And you kind of think there are lots of other things. I mean, there's people that are doing work on Minecraft, turn on drones, people dealing with coding. I mean, what's the sort of cool stuff that you've heard about across the different places in ISTE?
Well, I think some of the big things now are using those 3D printers. And of course, the maker movement is really hot at the moment.
Oh, massively. A couple of episodes ago, I spoke with the guys from Makers Empire out of Adelaide who they don't make 3D printers. What they've done is created software where kids can learn design thinking and putting blobs and bricks together to create things of value that can be used in their school. Anything from making a clothes peg, which is, is actually harder than it sounds, to these guys actually even created with some students, like year five, year six students, a model of a prosthetic arm to help a kid using a 3D printer. Stunning.
I first saw that in Sydney at Macquarie, I think. Now, another movement that I'm kind of on the peripheral edges of, I love it because it includes video as an option, is the flipped classroom guys.
Yeah.
So the most popular book that's ever been published by ISTE was Flip Your Classroom. So these guys are very involved with ISTE, and they have gone global in the last couple of years. And I know that Jonathan Bergman was recently in Australia touring all these different schools because that's a movement that's caught on all over the world, not just in the U.S.
There'll be some people may not know the flipped classroom thing. What's that all about?
Okay, well, it's basically where the teachers create the lesson on video using, you can use your iPhone or whatever to record yourself teaching the lesson. So the students view the lesson, the content, that they have to learn outside of the classroom. So at the library, at home, on the bus, wherever. And then when they come back to the classroom, they can use that time for more higher order activities like building projects or doing group work together. So the sky's the limit because you can really take advantage of this model to get the content out of the way so you can do the really impactful things during classroom time.
The beauty about that is I can imagine sitting on the school bus after watching a video like that on my way to school, and I've got time to think about what it was about. So, you know, I mean, I was one of those kids that was heavily distracted in classrooms, and to this day, I'm still heavily distracted. You can imagine that would actually been really good if back in my day type thing, it would have been kind of handy to be able to just concentrate on this lesson and go, right, I got it, and then just mull it over for a while, which means when I next, you know, catch up with my teacher.
Yeah, and then when you do it with the teacher, it's all about applying that knowledge, whether it's doing experiments or developing some research projects or what have you. And usually it's done in a collaborative problem-based learning type scenario.
Now, you used to be a teacher, and as far as I'm concerned, I think once a teacher, always a teacher in lots of ways. You would have had to have come across some scenarios or at least at a minimum amusing. What sort of things have you seen happen in the classroom?
Okay, it was a long time ago, but I remember, I was reminded of this just the other day when I went to a funeral of one of the teachers I used to work with, because they brought it up to me.
All right.
I used to be a life sciences teacher, and so I thought it would be very appropriate to have lots of animals in my classroom. So I had, you know, the big fish tank and the gerbils and the rabbits and the hamsters and the I had a big bullfrog. He was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But anyway, long story short, one time my room was over the cafeteria in the teacher's lunchroom. So somehow one of my students hadn't locked the door up tight on the little hamster cage, and a hamster got loose, and guess where he ended up? On the teacher's lunch table while they were eating.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah. I didn't get to see it. So sad. But one of the teachers was so freaked out, she stood up on her chair and screamed. So I was not allowed to have hamsters after that incident. And I've got lots of other animal mishaps. Story. So that's one of my fond memories.
There's a traveling outreach program, a program in biology. So we've got these spiny leaf insects and we've got hermit crabs as part of this thing. And so the staff often take them home at night because they've got to go to a school the next day and they look after them. And I found out of one of my staff members, hi, Kiri, if you're listening, she said that rather than just keep them in the cage, we kind of like keep them in like an open box with some sand and some water and all the stuff they need to stay alive with a you know, heat lamp, they should be happy. She heard in the middle of the night this scurrying, and the scurrying was not the hermit crab in the tray. It turns out the hermit crab had sort of crawled across the room, had gotten out the door because the door wasn't shut or whatever, and was within about a couple of centimeters for falling off the edge of a veranda. Okay, I rescued you. That little hermit crab, he's actually only a couple of meters away from me while we talk. Yeah, we call him Neil because after Neil Armstrong, he's a bit of an explorer. I kind of wonder, actually, there'd be a lot of stories where, well, they say never work with children or animals. So I wonder what happens in classrooms with them both combined sometimes.
A lot of fun, that's what.
Oh, dear. No, it is a lot of fun. Do you miss being in the science classroom?
Absolutely.
I think it's why you and I geek out a lot.
I know. I love to tell stories about, you know, working with kids and being in the classroom. And I would go back, but I don't know if I could afford it.
Yeah, I understand that. True. I mean, teachers, I mean, it would be some people going, yep, get it, totally, unfortunately. But look, we're all working on making things better very much so. And actually, just thinking, because I know that you're involved in lots of stuff, one of the things which I thought has been very cool, it's come up recently, is your work with NEPRIS.
Oh, yeah. So they're very similar to CILC, except they fill a different need, and that is career education. So an educator can get a NEPRIS license and connect their students with people that are live in the workforce. So every area you can imagine, from robotics to nursing to hairstylist, whatever it is, they can bring a person that's in that career into their classroom over live interactive video so the students can find out all they want to know about that career and ask questions. They can also sign up to get an expert in a particular field to mentor their students on a project. So we are sort of side-by-side neighbors. You can find them on the CILC website.
Oh, and what we'll do, we'll definitely throw that stuff in the show notes because I really love the idea of students speaking with real-world people in careers and hearing about not just what they're what they do, but their challenges, their aspirations, all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Give students context. It's great.
Well, the kid's number one question is, how much money do you make?
That's a bit of a shame in some ways, but I get it. I mean, we got to eat.
I learned that back when I was doing career education at Vanderbilt, but Nephris has taken it way above and beyond, made it a very seamless process. You know, to get the connection, they just send you a link, you click on it, and now you're connected with that expert.
Making connections has clearly been your life's work in lots of ways. Like, that's been your job, is to connect people up. And you've watched technology grow and change over time. And I kind of wonder, where do you think ed tech is going, at least in the communication side? Like, what could you, I mean, it's really hard to predict. It's like, hi, Jan, just give me a crystal ball. Let's go. But I kind of wonder, where do you think this is going to go over time?
Well, it's kind of scary to even think about it. I mean, we're already in the age of the Jetsons. Remember that show?
Yes, I love that show.
We don't have our little flying cars yet, but, you know, we do have some cars that are anti-gravitational. As far as education goes, everything is so much in the cloud now that I don't think schools are worrying so much with the clunky technology and software that comes in boxes. Everything's available through the sky, through the internet.
Yeah.
So I think we're already seeing the future. I don't know that all educators have really tapped into what they could be doing in the classroom using that technology. We've got so many schools that have one-to-one computers, and they're using them for 19th century kinds of applications, like watching a PowerPoint presentation or putting the worksheet on a Word document. So I think we still have a ways to go with educators taking full charge of all of those cool things that they can do.
I wonder about virtual reality in some ways. Like, we already know there are VR headsets around. And I kind of wonder, you could almost tour with your friends through museums and zoos and things in live format. With their educator.
Reality then is kind of coming of age finally. It's been around for 10 years. I remember trying to build my avatar back in, you know, the old days.
Yep.
And it was so clunky. The learning curve was so steep that I don't think it got adopted very quickly.
Mm.
And now with, you know, things like Google Glass, everything's starting to be easier for educators to adopt those kinds of things into their classroom and their museums as well. We have museums that are not only doing live interactive video conferences, but they're doing multicast streaming, they're doing virtual reality, come to the museum, move your avatar around all our different rooms and do hands-on things. So yeah, I think that's really a growing area.
And one of the things I really want to give a shout out to are the teachers who are producing content for other schools. I mean, if he's listening, Mr. Kim Perkins, you do fantastic work at the Camberwell Girls Grammar down in Melbourne. Just, they're producing content for schools to learn about, and the students are doing it.
Yes, and I'm waiting for Kim to give it to me so we can offer it up to all our members on CILC.
Kim, you've heard it here, mate.
I'm one of our content providers, but I don't have the content yet. So come on, Kim.
Yeah, no idea. I have to send this episode. Go, dude, you're getting a rev up. Dear idea. No.
Teachers a pyramid on how you can use interactive video, and at the bottom is distance classes. And then after that is virtual field trips. After that is student collaborations. And this is in the amount of happenings, of occurrences of this. And at the very top of my pyramid, I've got students creating content. Students as content creators, because I think that's really the most powerful applications, is when those students are given the freedom to create their own content and then share that with other students.
I love it. And people can really deep dive right into this. I know that Greg Zorbas out of Alaska pretty much has all his students constantly on connecting with other people outside of their school, like nearly every day.
Yep.
It's just big.
One of my favorite Alaska stories is, you know, they have this race every year called the Iditarod.
Yep.
And there was a really outstanding technology director in one of the boroughs out in the middle of nowhere. And he had a teenage daughter that was real interested in journalism. And what they did was they mounted a video conferencing system on a sled, and they went to all the checkpoints for the mushers, and the student team would interview the mushers when they were at those checkpoints. And that was broadcast down to the lower 48. That was a pretty cool application.
That's so cool. And like, and the thing is, you can mesh it so well, because I know that Lee Gamble out of Cleveland Natural History Museum, or if it's around the other way, Natural History Museum of Cleveland, but they've got one of their most famous dogs from Alaska. One of the races, sorry, it completely skips my mind as the name of this dog. I know it's pretty famous up in Alaska, but those people would know about this, that they could do like these before going to the Iditarod, the classes could have connected with Lee at Cleveland, met this famous dog that was involved with it, and then go get in touch with the people up in, you know, who are running the race right now. Like, that's serious. That's real.
Yeah. Well, I was fortunate because I got to meet one of the most famous mushers by the name of Jeff King. But before I met him, when I was at Vanderbilt in probably around 2003, I was fortunate enough to hook up with his daughter. I can't remember her first name, but she went to the University of Alaska and brought her dog and showed the students how to take care of a Iditarod dog. She brought us little mittens for his feet and talked about all the different things you have to do for a dog in the Iditarod. It was so cool.
Wow. And then, of course, from there, I mean, as a science teacher, we could easily then talk about movement of heat, insulation, et cetera, et cetera. Like, it's...
Yeah, you know, just their fur is a whole science lesson, all the different layers that protect them.
It's awesome. And kind of the sky's the limit, and just, you know, get creative and off you go.
Exactly.
Well, thank you. I mean, obviously, thank you very much for popping in. I know it's the end of your day, and we're just starting our day. I mean, I'm in Australia, you're in the States. Thank you very much. I know you might even get home through traffic, I suspect. But before you run away, there'll be people who would love to get in touch with you, no doubt. How might they do that?
Okay, so basic email is my name, Jay Zanitis, JZANETIS. At CILC.org. And then if you want to find me on Twitter, I'm at Janzan, JANZAN.
Perfect. And we'll throw that down in the show notes and make sure everyone can get in touch with you. Look, thanks very much, Jan. And hey, we get to catch up in a couple of weeks in the sun.
Yay.
In San Antonio. And unfortunately, by the time this episode likely goes to air, we would have been well gone by then. But I know that we would have had a good time over there. Well, thank you very much. I'll catch you another time.
All right, Ben.
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're all about science, ed tech, and more. To see 100 fun free experiments you can do with your class, go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS. And click 100 free experiments.
Yes, and thanks very much again, Jan, for connecting up with me just in our preparations on our way to San Antonio for the ISTE conference. And yes, we did all catch up. We certainly had a lot of Texas barbecue. My gosh, there's a lot of Texas barbecue down in San Antonio. Who would have thought? But catching up with all the distance learning crew down there was fantastic, and learning so much about how they're implementing augmented reality in virtual reality and using green screen, so no chroma key type stuff. All this cool stuff to be able to enrich lessons to teach people via distance is stunning. And I really enjoyed it. And Jan, thanks very much for popping in just before we had to head off to a major conference like that. So I'd like to really just go through just a couple of my learnings I took away from this interview, and I know that you will have had some too. Number one, for me, please try out some distance learning using some video or web conferencing technology. Now, here's the thing. I get it. I get that in some jurisdictions, in some schools, it potentially has been rolled out a little bit awkwardly. Perhaps the person who knew what they were doing has left, or maybe the equipment's a little bit dodgy, a little bit on the outer needs to be replaced, or maybe the internet connection might be a bit sketchy as well. There are ways around this. Certainly try it out again. Just if you've done it. And if you've never tried it, believe me, it's actually completely fine, especially now we've got new technology around which certainly connects. There are a number of ways you can try it through Polycom or Zoom or Skype if that's your thing. There are a few ways where you don't even need fancy equipment anymore, simply just a computer with a camera and a speaker. And if you hook that up to your interactive whiteboard or your data projector, kids will be able to see any content provider or school from around the planet live on a big screen, and they would be able to hear them through your speaker. And critically, the other person on the other side of the world, or you know, whoever you're connecting with, can certainly see and hear you use the speaker and microphones from your computer. You don't need fancy stuff. And if you haven't got a computer, you'd be surprised. You can use an iPad, a phone, a Google device, some form of device that's smart that allows you to do this. You really can. So please try it out. If you're not sure how, reach out to ISTE, the International Society for Technology and Education. If you jump on that website, you will find there are professional learning networks, and one of them deals with interactive video conferencing. And obviously, people in Australia, maybe this is not your thing to go on the international side, I get it. Jump on Virtual Excursions Australia. Virtual Excursions Australia is a non-profit entity, which, you know, it's kind of like a portal to sort of tell people how they're using it from all different ways. Some schools are contributing, museums are contributing, sort of what content's around, and critically, how to use the hardware so it works. You're always welcome to reach out to me too. I certainly am heavily involved in it. And hey, you may be able to check out Churchill Fellowship that I did, and goes into a whole bunch of details where I'll give the link in the show notes where there's a full report about why you might want to try video conferencing, what's the benefit, how do you do it, where you can go from there. It's worth your time. Number two, and this is certainly one that Jan only touched on just a little bit, but certainly grabbed my attention anyway, is Read Flip Your Classroom by Jonathan Bergman and Aaron Sams. And try to implement the ideas. The idea of being able to create a lesson via video that students can check out in their own time is great, because then the kids have got plenty of time to reflect on whatever was in the video and then ask you better questions when they're in the classroom. So questions can be really beneficial, but if they haven't had time to process what you've done in your lesson, well, the questions, they're not going to be as deep as they might be if they've had a day or two to stew on it and come back to you. And number three, once you've tried doing a bit of distance education using video conferencing or web conferencing technology, and yes, again, we can certainly help you out, try connecting with people who are working in a variety of occupations using a service like NEPRIS, N-E-P-R-I-S, NEPRIS. The idea of being able to connect with lawyers, accountants, doctors, plumbers, all sorts of people from all walks of life is cool, because the kids can then see what it's like to work in the real world, not just read about it or hear from their family and that's about it. So there you go. They're my top three learnings, and I bet you've got a few too. So hey, drop us a line. I'd love to know more.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed podcast. Love your science? We do too. Here's this episode's education tip of the week. Grab your pencil and get ready to make some notes.
There are so many ways to teach science. Let's be honest. So many ways. And I thought I might throw a different one out here today, is role-playing. Why don't you get your kids involved in role-playing to get a particular science concept out? Now, there might be some people listening going, oh man, seriously, role-playing? That's going to get awkward to pitch to my kids. They're not going to do it. Well, I suppose it depends on your kids, of course. No doubt it does. But there will be a way of getting kids involved if you can show that it emulates the real world and it's giving them real skills for the real world. It could be a forensic scenario. I mean, who doesn't like forensics? I mean, lots of kids watch CSI or Bones or whatever, even if they're meant to, even if they're a bit too young, they still do. So that's an easy scenario. But having scenarios around fix the environment or trying to work out how old a shipwreck is, having a scenario where kids have to role play out particular characters in that, whether it's landing a spacecraft or whatever, means that kids can research it and get their head in the game for what you're trying to teach. Now, here's a few different ideas to be able to get a role play to really work in a classroom. At least these are ones that work for me anyway, and I'd love to hear if you've got other ideas as well. So, number one, get your objectives for the lesson down first. What do you want them to learn? What are the students needing to do after the fact? Do they need to prepare a report or a presentation for this later? Is it going to be eventually a public performance? Seriously, I've seen people do public performances. A bit of pre-planning here will help you, well, not just only get your lesson together, but also keep your objective clear on what the learning outcomes are. And also, it also makes you really think about what are the skills you're trying to develop in the kids in the first place. I mean, eventually it's not just about assessment. It's about, is this good for them in real life? Number two, get pragmatic. What are the constraints here on the lesson? And this includes, are the kids going to buy into it in the first place? Also, can you donate enough time to be able to make this actually happen? How much time do you have to put this together? And if you don't have the time, how can you get the students to help with you to get it together? Are the students working in small groups? What's your budget? Just think about the logistics of getting this particular lesson together. Well, it's sounding a bit onerous, but believe me, a role play doesn't have to be over the top. But I have seen people do exactly the opposite. They have done a fantastic job with getting kids to emulate the world. Number three, what context will the students be working in? So define their roles. What are their character objectives so they know what they're going to be achieving? It's worth thinking carefully about which students work with which students. Like, what are their personalities like? Is some kid very good at the extrovert type delivery, and the other kids there might be more introverts and want to work around another area? Think about their personalities and who they work with well. Number four, plan for some time for your students to do some research about the topic before you run the role play in the first place, and then give them an opportunity to bring their new ideas into the session so that kids can then create the role play and morph it into something they own rather than being something that you've forced on them. And finally, think about the framework in which you're going to debrief the students afterwards. Is it a class discussion? Is it a reflection task? What are they going to do after the fact? Because, of course, inevitably, it's about the kids actually understanding why you did it in the first place. So there you go. There's some ideas about how to set up a role play in your classroom where kids can learn science. It just comes down to, what are you going to teach them?
This is the Physics Ed Podcast. We're excited about science. Grab a copy of our new book, Be Amazing, How to Teach Science the Way Primary Kids Love, from our website. Just search Be Amazing Book. It's available in hard copy and ebook. Go to physicseducation.com.au. That's physics spelled FIZZICS.
So we're getting close to the end of this episode, but there's still more to go through. There's so many things we can learn. And in this case, Jan Zanetis' expertise in ed tech really got me thinking about all the people we've been connecting with this podcast and beyond. And only last episode with Mandy Demetriadis from Maker's Empire certainly got into the applications of ed tech and why it can be profoundly important to show this to kids. Maker's Empire is a 3D printing company. I'd love you to listen to just what they've been doing.
We're constantly inspired by ways that 3D printing are being used around the world to solve real problems really cheaply and easily. And it was actually a group of students that had looked at the work that Enable does around the world, making prosthetic limbs. And they'd also got to know their teacher's child, who was 2 years old at the time and has cerebral palsy. And this little girl every morning has to have her legs strapped with these quite laborious straps all the way up her legs. And the kids had taken this little girl out into the play yard to play, and they noticed that these straps kept coming undone, they kept getting in the way, really annoying. So they got together, so this was year sixes got together to think about what they could do. And they actually ended up designing some clips in Maker's Empire, printed out a whole bunch of them, trialed them, tested them, and ended up with a plastic clip that holds these straps in place for Casey, the little girl. And to this day, a year later, she's still wearing them and still able to play around without the straps getting in her way. So solving a real problem that mattered was someone they knew and cared about.
How cool is that? These kids certainly rocked it when it came to sorting a problem out. And I love the fact that it was someone they knew and they worked with their teachers to use the tech that was in their room to solve a genuine problem. And I'd love to hear anything that you've been doing to solve problems using your students' expertise and knowledge that they've developed in your classroom. It's so cool what kids could do when given a chance.
Thanks for listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Sign up now for our fortnightly email newsletter. It's loaded with details on new experiments you can do, STEM teaching articles, new gadgets, exclusive offers, and upcoming events. Go to physicseducation.com.au. Scroll to the bottom and add your email.
And this brings us to the end of yet another Physics Ed podcast. Look, there's still more you can do. Jump on our website. There are so many free things that you'll certainly can consume and use in your classroom. You'll find blogs, you'll find articles. There's over 150 free experiments. There is a heap that you can be doing. And speaking of things coming up, next week, we're connecting with Anne Doran from the Australian National Maritime Museum. It was really interesting having a chat with her only the other week in regards to how they're using maritime history and maritime science to show kids how the world works. It's certainly an interesting episode, and you can check that out next week. And as always, may your science lessons be fun. Please make them informative and grab your students' imagination. You've been listening to me, Ben Newsome from Physics Education, and as always, you've been listening to the Physics Ed Podcast. Bye for now.
You've been listening to another Physics Ed podcast. We're excited about science. Subscribe to us on iTunes to download the next episode as soon as it's released. And don't forget, for hundreds of ideas, free experiments, our new Be Amazing book, and more, go to physicseducation.com.au.